That was terrific this morning. Celebration singers, great job in leading us in worship with your great music. We appreciate it so much. And it's such a very important part, as we were talking earlier with the choir. Music has always been a part of Christian worship. We can't help it. Because Jesus puts a song in our heart, we've got to sing it. And so we've been given so many beautiful hymns and songs, and our choir leads us, and you join in the singing. Well, we're here at the third Sunday in this very special time in the church we call the Lenten season, 40 days before the cross and resurrection. And during these weeks of Lent, I've been taking us, this week will be our third week, in the Gospel of John. And we're stopping periodically in John's Gospel and looking at one of the seven miracles that John records for us that Jesus did. There are many other miracles that Jesus performed. I know you know that. Matthew, Mark, and Luke records a bunch of them. But John takes only these seven and places them in his gospel. And one of the reasons we believe he does that is because one of the themes of the Gospel of John is that John wants people to see the glory and the power of Jesus. Because John knows that if people sees his glory, Jesus' glory, and then sees his power, they will rush to him, and they will follow him and serve him. And so each of these miracles is showing the dynamic glory and power of this one we call Jesus. I've called this series of sermons from the Gospel of John, Encounters with Jesus. The reason I do that is because that's exactly what John was intending to do. He was intending to hold up seven specific encounters that people had with the glory and the power of Jesus. And I want you to know something this morning. I don't want us just to read about these great encounters with Jesus and then leave and say to ourselves, my, that was wonderful. Wouldn't that have been great if we were back there with them experiencing that? What I want to happen to you and to me is I want us in these weeks of Lent to catch a glimpse in our hearts and minds of the glory and the power of Jesus and actually feel his touch on us as we worship here today. That's what I want to happen, and that's what I'm praying for. So, there's so much in this particular miracle of Jesus that I must quickly say, let's jump into it and move along. Here's the story. Here's the passage. There is a great religious feast in Jerusalem. The Jews had several of them. And whenever they were put on in Jerusalem, Jews and also Gentiles from a people around the world would flock to Jerusalem because it was a time of great celebration. It was a time of great worship. It was a time of great spirituality. And so we're told that it was one of those feasts. We're not told specifically which one, but Jesus goes up to Jerusalem to be a part of the festivities of this religious celebration. But what's interesting is he goes into Jerusalem at this high time of worship. And where does he go? He goes to the local hospital. He goes to this outdoor place that has a pool, and it's covered over. And there were people who were hurting, who were broken, who were in need, who were helpless, who were locked in without any kind of hope. That's where he goes. Bethesda is called, or is known as, House of Mercy. So therefore, I call this Mercy Hospital. And Jesus goes. And he goes to one man in particular, we're told. And he says to the man, would you like to get well? Now, the man doesn't answer him. I hope you notice that. The man does not answer him. The man says, I have no one to put me in the water when it's stirred. Let me explain that. There was a myth or a legend that was surrounding the pool there, because every once in a while, it must have been a subterranean sulfur or something that would bubble up to the top. And the myth or the legend that was passed along was that was an angel stirring up the water. And if the first person would get in after the angel stirred up the water, they'd be healed. And so this man says, when the water stirred up, I have no one to put me in. And then Jesus says to him, get up, take your mat, and walk. And lo and behold, my friends, that man who was an invalid for 38 years picked up his mat and walks away. Now, let me just say this to you, and then let me point some things out to you. It's important that I tell you, whenever you're reading the Bible, that goes with the readings you're doing with us together, but on your own, slow down. We read the Bible too fast. I read the Bible too fast. Slow down and pay attention. So that's what I want to do with you for the remaining portion of this text. I want to slow down and point out some things that could get overlooked if you're just reading quickly. So here's the first thing I want you to notice. I find it a blessing. I find it encouraging to notice that Jesus is constantly attracted, gravitating toward the needy, the hurting, the broken. Here he is at a high religious feast. But what gets his attention? What does he think about doing? Oh, I'm sure he worshiped. I'm sure he was a part of the celebration. Maybe it hadn't yet started, and he got to Jerusalem early. Or maybe it was in the middle. I don't know. We're not told that. But what we are told is that here is Jesus, instead of participating in all of the uproar in good and positive ways that was going on in Jerusalem, he sneaks away to a pool on the outskirts of the temple where there are a bunch of sick, wounded, hurting, bruised people. Why? Because Jesus cares about people who are hurting and bruised and broken. And so I want you to know this morning, and this happens to us from time to time, if you come to church with a heavy heart, if you've come to church today having experienced a terrible week, and you feel broken, you feel crippled up on the inside, you feel locked in to life as it is, and you don't like life as it is, Jesus is available and cares for you. Here's the second thing I want you to notice. Jesus is not only a person who gravitates to those who are hurting and broken, but he always takes the first step. Here he is going to a man and saying to him, would you like to get well? He takes the initiative. And I want you to know that's true for every one of us here. If you're a believer here this morning, you're not a believer because you got up one morning and said, you know what, I think I need God. And you went and you said, hey, God, I really need you. And would you please do something for me? That's not how it works. How it works is this. When you came to faith in Jesus, if you had one of those moments where you woke up and you said, you know what, there's something missing in my life. There's something that I need that I don't currently have. And I think that may be Jesus. Let me tell you something, friends. That was Jesus already knocking on the door. That was Jesus already coming to your heart and mind, making you aware of the emptiness that you have in your life. He took the first step, and that's the message of grace. We don't have to talk God into coming and touching us. He's coming and knocking on our door constantly and saying, here I am. I'm available. So if you sense a need in your life of any kind, that's Jesus saying to you, I'm here. I'm available. Here's a third thing I want you to notice. I want you to notice that we, like this man, when we do have a feeling of brokenness and emptiness in our life, too often we place our hope in the wrong place. This man was hoping for the stirring of the water. It wasn't going to work. That was just gurgling water, folks. Even though the rumor had been it was an angel. And I thought about the various ways, even in my own life, that I thought about if I could only have these things, my life would be put together. I don't know if you've ever thought about this or not, but I know in my young life, I thought like this. Boy, if I can just get a good, solid education, if I can go to the right school, get the right degree, then I'll really have my life together. Now, listen, folks, there's nothing wrong with education. I'm a big proponent of it. I spent tons of money on education. No, it is a good thing. But I want to tell you, I know a lot of messed up PhDs. I know a lot of people that have reached the pinnacle of education, and their life is falling apart. Education won't do it. And so then I thought, well, you know, if I can just have the right position, if my name can be on the door, and I've got the leather chair and the window that overlooks the city, and everyone thinks, wow. I know a lot of miserable CEOs. It's not in one's position. That doesn't heal the brokenness of our lives. And then I thought, well, maybe if I just get popular. Look at Hollywood. A lot of fame. Get my palm prints in the cement. I'd really make it. Life would be great. But I know a lot of burned out actors. I thought, well, maybe it's wealth. If I could just make a bunch of money. Buy anything I wanted anytime I could. That would put my life together. Friends, we look for healing. We look for meaning. We look for purpose. We look for significance in all the wrong places. Just like this man. Look to Jesus if you feel broken this morning. I don't know if there's anyone here like that. If you feel locked in to life that's out of control, look to Jesus. He is the one who can put life back together again. Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall, had a great fall. No one could put Humpty Dumpty back together. Oh, there is one. And that is Jesus. Well, here's another thing I want you to notice is the question that Jesus asked the man. Do you think it's a rude question? You don't have to answer. Do you want to get well? Man, I've been here 38 years. What do you think? What do you suppose Jesus asked that question? Now, we'll never really know till we get to heaven, but I'd like to suggest one or two suggestions, because in working with the medical profession and therapists and what have you, sometimes this question gets asked. And it's asked for a couple of reasons. Number one, to ask if the person really does want to get well, or have they become so accustomed to life as it is that they've convinced themselves it cannot be changed, they're locked in, I just got to deal with it. Or it's possible that Jesus is asking the question to create some faith in the man. You can't get in the water, but is there another way? Or will you be the one who carries me in the water? Maybe that was the way that Jesus used to begin to create some hope in this man's life after 38 years. As I want to ask you this morning, and I ask myself this from time to time when I find my life kind of falling apart. Bob, do you want to get well? Folks, do you want to get well? Whatever it is. And then I want you to notice the power of Jesus. You got to see this. How does he heal this man? He gives him a command. Are you kidding me? Get up. Take your mat. Walk. It's not a suggestion. Would you like to try to get up and carry your mat? I'd recommend you try to get up. No, that's not what he says. He looks at the man and he says, pick up your mat and walk. It happens. Now, that shouldn't surprise us, because the two previous miracles involved the same kind of dynamic power of Jesus. Because in the miracle of the changing of water into wine, Jesus simply said to the servants, fill up the water pots with water. And then, I know he didn't do this, but it's almost as if he whispered in Peter's ear, watch and see what happens. The pots are filled up, and it's the best wine in the country. And the man that we saw last week, who has a son dying 20 miles away, and Jesus says to him, your son's alive and well. And he turns around, he believes Jesus, and he heads for home. And the servants come and say, your son's well. When did that happen? About 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Man alive. That's exactly when Jesus spoke those words. It should not surprise us, my friends, because the words of Jesus have power. That's why I encourage you to read the Bible. That's the words of Jesus. It will transform your life. But not only that, do you remember how God created the world? He spoke it into being. Let there be. Bingo, there was. That's our God. That's our God. Well, one final thing. Don't overlook the last word that Jesus spoke to this man. This man's now walking with his mat, and he's being confronted by the religious leaders. You know, religious people get into trouble with Jesus again and again. Have you noticed that in the Bible? We religious people get in the way of Jesus. So let me tell you, folks, let me just tell you, we don't want religion here. We want a relationship with God through Jesus Christ. Big difference. Because religion is rules and regulations and standards. You broke that. A relationship is that I have Jesus in my life. He's my companion. I can talk with him. He can talk with me through his word. He can touch my life. We want relationship. And Jesus says to the man, I want you to stop your life of sin, or something worse will happen. Now, what's he mean by that? Here's a man that's been an invalid for 38 years. What kind of sinning could the guy be doing, for crying out loud? Oh, but sin, before it's even actions, is in the heart. It's in the mind. And so Jesus is saying, clean up your act spiritually. Stop sinning. Now, you and I will never stop sinning perfectly. What does he mean by that then? He means stop the practice of sin. Before I met Jesus, I practiced sin on a regular basis and couldn't care less. But once I came to Jesus, I get checked. I go, oh, that was the wrong thing to say. I'm sorry. That was the wrong thing to think. I'm sorry. That was the wrong thing. We don't practice it. We fall into it. We slip up. But it's not our lifestyle. And that's what Jesus is saying. Now, what's the worst? What would be worse than 38 years of being an invalid? Facing eternity and losing his soul. That would be worse. Would you bow your heads with me? Now, I've asked you during this sermon, as you bow your heads, I just want you to be in a time of prayer. I've asked you during this sermon, is anyone here that has come, you've had a lousy week, or you're battling with something that's got you down and discouraged, you feel broken, you feel empty, you feel without meaning and purpose and significance. I don't know. I'm touching on a few words that may apply. But I want you to know something. Jesus Christ is here with us through his Holy Spirit. And he wants to touch you this morning before you go out the door. Don't take this back home with you. And so I'm going to say a prayer, and I want you to pray it silently. No one needs to know but you and Jesus if this applies to you. Lord Jesus Christ, I feel empty. I feel broken. I feel confused. I feel a long way from you. I feel that my life lacks meaning and significance. And so this morning, I'm asking you to touch me. I'm asking you to bring meaning and purpose and healing and wholeness into my life. I'm asking you to feel your touch and know that you have heard me and you have touched me. I'm coming to you, Jesus, and I'm trusting in you alone. Amen.